One of the biggest names in rock, Ozzy Osbourne, has died at the age of 76. The Prince of Darkness from Black Sabbath, of course, with Parkinson's and health issues and surrounded by family, as Sharon and his kids announced the death of a rock legend, Ozzy Osbourne, today at the age of 76. If you have a tune you want to hear, let us know at 1-877-332-8255. But I know a man you've met, Locker, and Ozzy Osbourne.
Couple times. One was a meet and greet back in the day before a show, for an Ozzy show, and then another opportunity to interview him before they released 13, which was the last Sabbath album in 2013. And a chance to interview him in Los Angeles with him and Geezer. And that was an interesting experience.
Yeah, we'll have more. Locker will share some more stories.
Bigger family guy than I think people may have thought, right? Because everyone has him up on a pedestal as this rock and roll icon. But
we got a sneak peek with the reality show.
The Osbournes. Did you watch that at all?
A little bit of it.
Yeah.
Sharon! It was an interesting peek behind the curtain of the life of the Osbournes back in the day. Ozzy Osbourne died at the age of 76. Each every day, we begin the Green Zone with the starting lineup, the top sports headlines, and the Jays continue to cruise at home.
And this is hooked to left field, and it's into the corner. Springer is in to score. Guerrero is getting the wave. And he'll come in too. A two-run double for Bichette.
A 4-1 win for the Toronto Blue Jays over the New York Yankees at the Dome in Toronto, and that's 11 straight home wins. That is a franchise record for consecutive wins at home. So the Jays have also won 5 straight since the All-Star break. 4 games up. They have the Yankees again tonight in the second of a 3-game set as they're rocking, are the Toronto Blue Jays, especially in the Dome.
100%. And we'll stick with baseball. Daryl Davis has to be happy because his Brewers continue to be hot.
Jackson Churio. How about Churio? Center field, Rodriguez back, and it's off the top of the fence. Yelich sent around third. It's going to be a play at the plate. Young's throw is light. Yelich scores from first base.
Interesting year because, you know, your Yankees and your Dodgers generally are dominating the, you know, their divisions and the major leagues as a whole. And you got the Tigers doing well. You got the Jays doing well. You got the Brewers at the top of the National League right now, and they continue to win. And they've been beating good teams. So 11 game winning streak right now. And we get to hang out with Daryl Davis every Wednesday. You spend more time with him because
he was wearing the Brewers hat at Rider practice today. Of course
I was going to say the Brewers hat's been in heavy rotation for Daryl.
I don't think he takes it off. He might be sleeping with the Brewers hat on. Maybe there's a superstition there.
Possibly. We'll check in with him tomorrow.
Also, the Riders, as mentioned, practice day number one in prepping for the Edmonton Elks, and the Riders feeling pretty good heading into week 8.
We're not careful. This could easily be a game where you have a letdown coming off of a game like that because everybody in the media is starting to pat us on the back. But like I told you, you've heard Nick Saban say it before, it's rat poison, right? And it's good, or whether it's good or bad, you start patting yourself on the back or beating yourself up. Neither one of them are true. Every week's a new week, and that's why Coach Mace talks all the time about going 1-0.
Meanwhile, Trevor Harris, once again, the PFF Honor Roll Quarterback of the Week for his performance against the BC Lions. Also landing on the Honor Roll were Dante Myers, the receiver, and defensive tackle Mike Rose. Injury updates, not good news for Kadeem Carey, as expected. Corey May said it's going to be tough to see him at all this season from that knee injury. He'll be out for the rest of the year. And no Jameer Thurman, starting middle linebacker, did not practice today. We'll wait for the injury report coming out in just a little bit from the Rough Riders. We'll see. Aubrey Miller Jr. was in Jameer Thurman's spot at middle linebacker. That would be a big loss with the Edmonton Elks coming in. Also a reminder, and we'll remind you this all week long because it is important, it is the Purolator Tackle Hunger Game.
That's right.
So that is this Friday at Mosaic Stadium. Those non-perishable food items, cash donations, Grey Cup's going to be there, all that stuff you're familiar with Purolator. So show up and show out for the food banks with the Purolator Tackle Hunger Game in Regina this weekend.
So not great news for the Riders on the injury front, but good news for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as they had somebody returning to practice today.
Now he takes it, but he does bring a blitz. Flores trying to get it away. Scramble. Flores to the end zone. He's got it. How about that from Zach?
Towards the end of the game, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers were losing to the Stamps, and Zach Collaros got rocked. The Blue Bombers are 3-2 this season. Both those losses to the Stamps so far. Of course, him back at practice after that hit is good news for Winnipeg. They are third in the West right now. They are in a must-win situation, as all teams are in the West, with the West being dominant in the CFL again this year. Next up for Winnipeg, they will be in Toronto on Saturday.
And Chad Kelly was practicing. Not taking first team reps yet for the Toronto Argonauts.
Ah.
Still Nick Arbuckle, but there was a lot more work with Chad Kelly. They need him back in Toronto. As we stick to football, as the National Football League now has 30 of 32 teams opening camp. Veterans reporting as speculation ramps up for one of the biggest stars. Could this be the last one for Travis Kelce?
Anytime you're with a guy for 13 years, you end up being close to that player. And so we haven't talked about last year's in that. So, you know, you hope he plays forever, but that's probably not going to happen to any of us.
Of course, Travis Kelce is entering the final year of his contract. His production has been on the decline the last couple of years. He had an awful Super Bowl game, you may remember. But could this be it for Travis Kelce as he walked into camp with Patrick Mahomes, maybe for the last time? It's not like he really needs to play football anymore. He and his brother can and are making a lot of money at a certain podcast you may have heard of.
I heard his girl. He's got a pretty famous girlfriend.
Can't remember her name.
Yeah, she does okay too, from what I've heard.
She does all right, I think.
I like that prediction. There's a good chance Travis may not play forever.
Forever
from Andy Reid. Put that on the board, Andy.
Is that on DraftKings? Can we make that bet? All right, coming up next, losing a legend in music today. Locker had the chance to interview Ozzy Osbourne back in the day. He'll share some stories with you next. If you have a certain Ozzy song, Black Sabbath, let us know what you want to hear at 1-877-332-8255. This is the Green Zone on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'll request Aussie Day today in honor of Ozzy Osbourne, who died at the age of 76. The family posted on social media as Ozzy Osbourne, the rock icon, has died. Health complications for
Parkinson's.
Much of his last few years, of course, at his last show a couple of weeks ago.
July 5th. So he did that show in London, and he did it on a, like, he sat for most of it, but in England. But I wasn't aware of how sick he was. Right? There's just always this underlying thought that he was gonna, you know, when the world ended, it'd be, you know, Keith Richards, Ozzy Osbourne, and
that's
a handful of cockroaches. And, yeah,
so, Locker was able to actually interview Ozzy Osbourne in your music past life, doing, you know, album premiere, world premieres and things like that. And it was 13 was the album.
Yeah.
That was the focus. But you can find that. I think you've shared that interview on your social media, Locker, at Lachlan Cross. And Ozzy spoke a little bit about the beginnings of Black Sabbath.
We started off, we were four guys wanting to be in a band. And We made a record, and from that moment on, our lives were forever changed. I mean,
we all lived around the corner from each other, so that doesn't happen anymore.
So I got a chance to sit down with Ozzy and Geezer, and I did the interview and then came back and put together the Canadian World Album premiere for Black Sabbath 13, and it was an hour-long special, and it played across a number of radio stations across the country. And the interesting thing about it was that Sharon was there. So it was Geezer, it was Ozzy, it was Sharon, and some like people from their team, right? But Ozzy and Sharon held court. So that I was basically in the middle of an episode of The Osbournes. It was wildly entertaining. They're no different, even when there isn't mics in front of them, than they are in, you know, in a private situation. And they're bickering, and she's correcting him, and he's telling her to stop talking so he can continue his story. And it literally was an episode of Osbournes.
Well, they were quite the team.
Yes.
Very. With his health issues, too, with Parkinson's and, yeah, you know, a diagnosis that was a little bit later, right? Like, it was just, yeah, like, oh, I thought it was probably alcohol-induced and things like that. And then, oh, no, you have, Ozzy, you got Parkinson's.
I think he had a shake for a long time, but he was in and out of different sort of stages of, well, medication and things over the years. And I think a lot of it, I think they thought a lot of it was, you know, medication related.
Another clip blocker I found interesting from the, it was specifically about 13, but kind of skipping. He spoke about, you know, how do you compare today to compare to 79?
The reaction we've got from 13 album is, it's unbelievable. And I'm going, what? Because it's so natural for us to make it, to do it, that we go, I don't, it didn't seem special. It's just what we do, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't, people ask us questions like, what was the difference of them in the process of doing an album now to when you finished it in 79? I can't answer because we just do it, you know. We know each other. It's the unit of Black Sabbath is just an unstoppable unit, you know.
An unstoppable unit.
The thing about that band is I think a lot of people would be shocked about the division of labor in that band. Geezer wrote a lot of the lyrics for Black Sabbath. Ozzy wrote a lot of the music. And I don't know if people gave him credit for that over the years or if he was known for that, because he was kind of the guy that sat down on the piano and worked out, you know, the structure of a song and took it to the band. And I mean, listen, I'm not going to take away anything that Tony Iommi did. You know, he was the riff guy, but musically, the structure of those songs was a lot of Ozzy. And I was surprised to learn that Geezer and Sharon actually even contributed lyrics to Ozzy's musical career over the years, that Geezer wrote a lot of the lyrics for Black Sabbath.
Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. A lot of the requests are coming in for Black Sabbath songs, Ozzy songs. On this day, we remember a rock legend. But when it comes to his sports presence, already there's a few people that are requesting this, because it's one for the ages when you talk about a Chicago Cubs game.
I don't remember what I have to do. And I don't have to do. And I don't have to do. But if we didn't do, please make sure I'm dead.
Also, a famous picture from the 80s of him. Do you remember this shot? It's a mug shot, but he's in a St. Louis Blues jersey.
Well, when they won the Stanley Cup in the Stanley Cup final, he actually not reenacted the photo, but he tweeted out, "Go Blues!" And he's wearing a Blues jersey in 2019 on their way to a Stanley Cup championship. Keep the requests coming, as we'll remember Ozzy Osbourne throughout the show. They announced today his family, he was surrounded by loved ones as he died at the age of 76. Sweet Leaf by Black Sabbath, as We honor the life of Ozzy Osbourne as the family notified on social media that Ozzy, surrounded by family, passed away at the age of 76. One of the biggest rock icons of all time. Your request, 1-877-332-8255. Ozzy songs, Black Sabbath songs. What do you want to hear? 1-877-332-8255.
That Sweet Leaf takes me back to my to high school. Yeah. Blair wanted to hear that one. So,
of course, one of the hottest teams in baseball outside of the Milwaukee Brewers is the Toronto Blue Jays. Five straight at home since the trying to make it five straight at home since the All-Star break, but they've won 11 straight, a franchise record. New York Yankees back at the Dome tonight. Nick Ashbourne joins us from Sportsnet and the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast to bring you up to date on the Jays. Nick, thanks for your time today.
Absolutely a pleasure to come on with you guys.
So when you look in, what do we got here? 9 days, you be Ross Atkins. Well, we'll give you a minute to be Ross Atkins. What is Nick doing going into the trade deadline to try to make this team already a contender, but even better?
Got to get into character here. No, I think that realistically, you're going to see some kind of action in the bullpen. You know, Jimmy Garcia was someone they were counting on for the late innings, and not necessarily the ninth, but in the eighth and the seventh in tough spots. You know, he brought the velocity, and, you know, he was just a really effective veteran guy you could count on. Now they're a little thin down there. They could probably use a lefty and a righty. So I could see probably two pitchers coming in the door in the bullpen. And then there's been a lot of rumors about another starter, which, you know, they do have guys. You know, they've got five guys in the rotation now, but one of them is, you know, Max Scherzer on the wrong side of 40 dealing with a thumb injury. One of them is Eric Lauer, who as recently as last year was pitching in Korea, and we don't really know how long his success is going to last. And then the guy coming, Alek Manoah, we don't know when he's coming back, and it's been a long time since we've seen him be really effective. So even though there's quantity in the rotation, there's not necessarily the quality that they want. That seems like it's going to be the focus. A couple of relievers, a starter, wouldn't be shocked if there's a right-handed bat, but now we're starting to ask for a lot here.
Nick, 1-9, this team has been very consistent, very impressive, but is there someone that has jumped out at you as a standout, as someone to highlight on a conversation on the Green Zone in Saskatchewan?
I mean, the guy who I think is becoming maybe a folk hero might be a bit of a stretch, but has taken on a lot of the fan base's imagination is Addison Barger, because this is a player who came up as a rookie last year, and he looked a little bit lost. He was a little over-aggressive. His approach wasn't fantastic. We'd heard about all the power he'd shown in the minor leagues. It didn't really translate to the majors, and his second shot at Major League Baseball has been a totally different story. He's a lot more composed. Suddenly all those tools he has, that raw strength, the power, it's a little bit more refined. He's picking his spots better. And suddenly this guy is a middle-of-the-order force that they were kind of hoping Anthony Santander was going to be when they signed him to the big contract in the offseason. He was ineffective. He got hurt. Barger stepped up, and he's playing a critical role for the team, driving in runs and putting the ball over the fence pretty consistently.
Of course, Bo Bichette says is the best team I've ever played on. Statistically, right now in this part of the season, they are, absolutely. So how far are we going here, Nick? Like, Jays fans, how far into October should the expectations be for this team?
I mean, I don't want to pour too much cold water on anything because this is a magical moment. I think it's still fair to say as much as their record is up there with some of the other teams in the league, they would be in kind of the second tier of contenders. I still don't think you see them alongside, you know, the Dodgers, the Tigers, teams like that on pure talent, the Mets or Phillies when they're really going. But first of all, we'll see what they do at the deadline. That could play a role. I think the expectation at this point is to at least advance in the playoffs. Like, you know, you got to get there. They could still fall off in the second half, but it's looking fairly likely that they're going to get there. And this wall they've run up against in this era has been they've been unable to do anything in the playoffs. In 2020, you know, that team was kind of ahead of schedule, wasn't really expected to do anything. But then, you know, in 2022 and 2023, those clubs people thought could potentially do something, and neither of them were able to win a game in the playoffs. So advancing in the postseason, I think, is kind of the low end of the expectation, whether that's winning a wild card round or if they're able to climb higher and avoid that round, winning a divisional round. That's what people definitely want to see. And then from then on out, it's about, you know, who's getting hot at the right time and just seeing where the ride takes you.
Just quick follow-up on if they make it to the playoffs. Will Jose Barrios stay in the game this time if they make the playoffs?
You'd like to think people have learned their lesson and don't make the same mistakes multiple times. We'll have to see.
So after last night, Nick, the Jays have 11 straight at home. Toronto hasn't always been a dominant home team. They have their moments. And right now they have the best home record in the MLB. Now, can we give a little bit of love to the fans? Because from all accounts, Jays games have been pretty exciting to go to. Is the team feeding off of that?
I think there's something to be said for it. I mean, you look at their home record right now today, they're 36-16, and on the road, they're 23-25. Now, a lot of teams do better at home. You know, it's easier when you sleep in your own bed and you have the same routine. I get that. But there is something to be said for it. You know, they're consistently selling out right now. They're really hitting the ball well at home. I think when they had some of their renovations at first, people suspected that it might be good for the hitters, the way some of the fences were moving, the dimension of the park, and the exact opposite happened. It ended up being really pitcher-friendly initially. I think the team has sort of started to figure out how to hit in this ballpark. There are some guys like Vladdy and Dalton Varsho in 2023 that really struggled at home when at first the alignment got a bit funky. Again, I just think over a couple of years they've started to figure out how that plays. But there's definitely energy in this park. Like, it is filled up on a consistent basis. It is loud. It is a strong atmosphere. Like, this is a team that has captured the imagination of the city a little bit. And they did that when they swept the Yankees the first time, because suddenly you got headlines going around that say Blue Jays sweep Yankees top of AL East. Now, you don't have to be a baseball sicko to know that's a big deal. Suddenly the more casual fans are starting to get on board, and now that's been building for a couple weeks now, and instead of there being a letdown in the immediate wake of that moment of excitement, they've only carried that momentum further forward.
Nick Ashburn joining us, writing for Sportsnet, co-host of the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast, as well as the Jays continue to be red hot. But now here, you said you don't want to pour cold water on it. here I am. Are there people in Toronto who's covered the Jays, who are fans of the Jays, who are just waiting for the bad news to happen? Is there that, okay, when do they go on their seven-game slide and fall out of the AL East? Or is there just way more optimism than pessimism in Toronto right now?
I mean, we'll see what happens with this Yankee series. I think if the Yankees had come in to this series we're watching right now and they'd swept the Jays, that would have been really big. I think even the Jays getting one win out of three, and again, there are two games left to be played, so we'll see how that goes. I think one win even sort of holds things at bay because they're guaranteed to have sole possession of the division lead. You know, there's some aspect of that with Toronto sports. You know, a lot of Jays fans are Leafs fans. That's the reality of it. A lot of Leafs fans have become accustomed with expecting the worst, but it's not quite exactly the same crowd. I don't think the exact level of fatalism is there. But, yeah, the lack of even winning a playoff game in those recent years that I outlined, that's part of it. The fact that some of the underlying numbers are a little bit better for some of the other teams around them, that's part of it. There's certainly an idea of no one is 100% sure how they've been quite as good as they've been. And so there's some aspect where there could be another shoe to drop, but I don't think that that means a total collapse is in the cards.
So let's dig into that, Nick. No one's really sure, and every time we have a conversation about the Jays on the Green Zone, that kind of actually, that conversation sort of, we get into it a bit. So the Jays right now are the top of the league in batting average, OBP, and hits. What adjustments have you seen them make that would give them that sort of offensive spark this year? Have you noticed anything? Can you pinpoint anything?
Yeah, I mean, those numbers that you've quoted, like, they've been outstanding at putting the bat on the ball. The contact rate is there. They're not striking out. They're extremely pesky and difficult to pitch to. Like, they are, I think that they genuinely exhaust opposing pitching sometimes, because some, whether it's the long, tough at bats, like the one we saw from David Schneider last night, or just the fact that it's the eighth and ninth hitters who are coming up with big hits, that sometimes when pitchers are kind of mentally thinking they're going to get a break, and that never seems to happen. So there's an aspect to that where the whole lineup seems to be contributing. I think that there's some good managerial work happening where John Schneider is really running his platoons pretty tight, and he's making sure everybody's in the right matchup at the right time. And so, you know, you have, again, this sort of pesky lineup. It's difficult to strike out. The ball is always in play. They're forcing opponents to play defense. We saw that with the Yankees. You know, sometimes when you give the other team an opportunity to make a mistake, they'll do that. But the difference is that we've seen that a little bit in 2023 and 2024. Like, they were good at putting the ball in play. They even got on base fairly well. But what they lacked was the punch to bring that around. And they're still not a great home run hitting team, although they've been better in the last few months. But there's just enough there. Like I mentioned, Addison Barger coming through as a left-handed power bat has been huge. George Springer bouncing back as a major power threat has been a big factor.
My boy, you know, Kirk. Alejandro.
Alejandro Kirk, couple doubles last night. You know, he's been much better. So even if the power isn't elite, you've got the elite contact and the elite on base, and you're pairing it with sort of solid power. And that is enough to be pretty substantial from a run-scoring perspective. And then, you know, Anthony Santander comes back at some point late in the season. Maybe he can provide even more of that. Dalton Varsho is not too far away. Like, there's reasons to be optimistic of this offense that goes beyond saying, oh, all these role players are doing really well, because some of these guys will come back, and you won't necessarily need, you know, a Joey Loperfido or a Will Wagner to come up with a big hit, because it'll be a better-known player like Dalton Varsho or Santander.
Okay, so with that being said, should we bring up maybe the most underappreciated human being on the Blue Jays behind the scenes? I know this because for years the biggest Blue Jay fan in the building kept on complaining and cursing the name Guillermo Martinez. How big of an addition was David Popkins as the hitting coach this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that you'll never know 100%. You'll never know what would have happened if they had a different coach. You'll never know if they had another year of Martinez, would they have figured out. I'm not sure. So the black and white of it, I'm not quite there with. But I will say that it's basically the same dudes that they had before who are making things happen now. It's not all these guys that they brought in. You know, Jimenez has not hit well, and then he went on the IL. Santander did not hit well, then he went on the IL. Those were mainly the guys they added. So generally speaking, the players who have performed for the Jays this season were in the building last year and not able to perform. And so that does speak to coaching potentially being a big factor here. You know, George Springer has been a lot looser, more willing to strike out, more willing to take risks in pursuit of power. I think there's definitely a Popkins stamp on that. Alejandro Kirk hitting the ball so much harder, better bat speed. I think there could be something there. They are a little bit more aggressive, I think, more willing to make mistakes, more willing to go after it early in the count. And these are also the type of things that fans like to see, too. I think the previous seasons, there was a bit of passivity that, you know, the average fan didn't love to see a guy work a count for a bunch of time and then end up grounding out weekly to avoid the strikeout. Like, it was not a great brand of baseball at times. And I think, again, it's not like they've suddenly become the greatest power team of all time, but there's just enough of that aspect of aggression and strength that it does feel a little different.
This is the last question for you, and it's kind of random, and it's going to seem really, really strange, but it was a conversation I had with my wife last night, and back me up on this one, because she didn't agree with me, and then Jamie was questioning it as well. Davis Schneider, does he look like everyone's high school shop teacher to you?
I can see it. I wouldn't go against that. I think that's, I mean, the mustache is doing a lot of work there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, if he didn't have the mustache, it might be a different situation. He's maybe a little, I would imagine someone maybe a little bit taller, but, you know, the mustache is there. The blue collar vibe is definitely there with David Schneider. So yeah, I'll give it to you.
There's one thing missing from that description, and it's what's not missing. He has all the digits of his fingers. I went 2 for 2. Every shop teacher I had had a missing digit or part of a digit. So That's the big flaw for Davis.
Okay, he's got all his fingers, but he has the look.
Yeah, okay.
all fingers for now.
Nick, appreciate your time. Thanks for it. Enjoy your work, and we'll have to have you back
awesome,
again soon.
Nick, thank you.
Great to be with you. Have a good one, guys.
That is Nick Ashburn from Sportsnet. Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast as well is where you can find his work covering the Jays. Coming up next, goes down as one of the most efficient pitching performances in the history of Major League Baseball, and it happened on this day in sports history. Next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. On this day in sports history, it was one of the most masterful pitching performances in modern baseball history. 1997, Greg Maddux took on a Sammy Sosa and the Cubs.
That should do it. Ground ball to Lemke. He's got it. Greg Maddux has won his 14th game of the year. He did it with 78 pitches and only 15 of them missed the strike zone. One hit, no run, no errors, one left. And folks, you just saw a great pitching performance.
64. It was actually 14, not 15. 64 of his 78 pitches were strikes. That's mind-boggling for how good Greg Maddux was.
I might have to throw 78 pitches to get a strike.
So you won't be pitching for a home run derby contestant anytime soon?
Not anytime soon.
That is not the record for the fewest amount of pitches in a baseball game, but it was one of the most
masterful. What's the record? That's not the record?
No. Red Barrett. In 1944, only needed 58 pitches.
What the? How does that happen?
They just kept hitting the ball.
Oh, that's a good point. So, if everybody's just hitting the first pitch,
you're not going to need a lot of pitches. But for modern baseball,
they had good defense in the 40s.
It was one of the most masterful performances. 64 of 78 pitches for a complete game for Greg Maddux.